Today's program is brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show tracing the stories behind your favorite Asian foods. I'm your host, Linda Liu. We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, we dig deep on a dish or aspect of Asian cuisine by having a conversation with the passionate people from the world of Asian food. For today's conversation, we actually won't be talking about a specific Asian dish or cuisine, but we're happy to have our first Asian food collective on the show. In the studio tonight, we have a few members of the Asian Food Mafia, which is a group of culinary professionals who support the education and growth of Asian food. Please welcome chefs Chris Chung, Doran Wong, and Jonathan Wu.
How you doing? Hey. Pleasure to be here.
Hey, Linda.
Thanks for joining us, guys. Okay, so a quick intro to our guests. First, we have Chris Chung, who is a New York native and grew up in the heart of Chinatown. He cooked in the kitchens of Jean Georges and Nobu and was chef of the Monkey Bar and Ruby Foo's before opening up East Wind Snack Shop, a restaurant inspired by the tea houses of Chinatown that he grew up with. And we have Doran Wong, who is chef of Northern Tiger, which serves up food from the north of China, and he's part of the Rivers and Hills Hospitality Group. Doran has a unique international background, having worked in Boston, Singapore, and Hong Kong, as well as experience in launching restaurants ranging from the Ian Schrager Hotels to Shang at the Thompson Lower East Side Hotel and Food Park in the Venti Hotel in New York. And Jonathan Wu, welcome back. He is friend of the pod. He was our guest back in season 2, where we talked about seasonal Chinese vegetables. He was the chef of Feng Tu, which earned 2 stars from the New York Times and was Michelin rated. Currently, he is working as a private chef and writing a cookbook. All right, where to begin? So you guys all have such rich backgrounds and experience cooking various cuisines. Just individually first, can you tell us about what kind of food you're focused on making right now and the influences you're drawing on?
All right, I'll go first. This is Chris Chung from East Wind. So, Happy New Year, everybody, right? Because it's Yom Kippur. So,
yep.
So everybody that would be listening to the Asian part of the Heritage Network definitely has to, you know, be into the Happy New Year tonight. So
very cultural of you.
Yes. So for me, I just try to cook is the coolest Chinese food I can do at this point. And I draw from what I ate growing up in Chinatown. And so I try to bring that forward. And then, of course, you know, I've worked with chefs like John George, Van Gerichten, and Nobu Matsuhisa. And, you know, it was, you know, part of the New York dining scene. And so we, you know, have to throw in all that good stuff that I've learned over the years into that as well. Right now what I do is I make really good dumplings at East Wind Snack Shop. And that's been pretty good for the last few years.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. My name is Doran. Right now, been trying to really cook Cantonese food again. You know, it's what I grew up on.
Yes,
right?
That is Cantonese food. Yeah. I feel like that's been forgotten. I get people coming into my restaurant and saying, I can't eat spicy food. And I realize that all they know of Chinese food is Szechuan food because it's been so popular in the last few years. And Cantonese food was always kind of regarded as the top Chinese food. And I think it's time to get back to that, no?
Yeah. You know, I've always wanted to introduce different types of Chinese cuisines and learn about them and trying to cook them. You know, Yunnan Kitchen, we're doing Yunnan food there. And then now Northern Tiger, we're doing, you know, Northern Chinese food. I just feel that, you know, Cantonese food is what a lot of people are kind of, they understand it and they kind of, they can relate to it just because of the history with the Cantonese people. It's easier cooking Cantonese, especially where I'm from and my family is from.
Where is your family from?
They're from Toisan. You're from Toisan too.
I'm from Toisan, and Toisan was big in Chinatown.
Yeah.
Everybody was Toisan up until I'd say like 1985 or 1990.
Still are. There's little generations. I think we're like the third generation.
Yeah. So it's been many years. Like my grandfather came here in 1920. So.
So now, cooking Cantonese food, but trying to make it more healthy. I think that's the direction that, that I'm heading
into.
That's
great. And where are you doing that?
So we also have restaurants in Miami called Lotus and Cleaver. We have one in Austin, Texas. And that's more of like the modern Cantonese cooking, and we're doing Chinese barbecue, and we're hoping to bring it back into New York City probably early next year.
Cool.
Yeah.
And Jonathan, what about you? What are you obsessed with right now?
Surprise, surprise, vegetables. I'm 5 years late to the game, but I just read Dan Barber's The Third Plate, and it was life-altering. And one of the things he talks about is the proportion of protein to vegetables in a typical American meal. And it's usually a huge piece of steak or a piece of chicken, and then small amounts of vegetables and starch. What I love about Chinese cooking, Asian cooking, and then specifically for me, the home-cooked Chinese food that my mother made for the family, those proportions are inverted. So one sinewy piece of steak from a cow's leg, it's like chuck steak, very undesirable from a Western perspective. Like, my mom would slice it up thinly and marinate it and then stir fry it with a lot of vegetables. So this sinewy steak could feed a family of five. So I guess I've been taking that mantle up from my mom. And so this summer, things like taking heirloom tomatoes and then making a dressing with 1,000-year-old egg and garlic chives, and doing my personal take on Chinese flavors, and then adding them to market vegetables like the tomatoes or fresh shelling beans.
Will you be sharing your recipe somewhere?
Eventually.
That cookbook, right?
Yeah. So there's the Asian Mafia cookbook that's coming out, and so there'll be recipes in that, and then I'm working on a personal cookbook too, but that's under wraps. No. There's a proposal that's hopefully will be sold.
Awesome. Okay, we'll have you back and talk about that.
Sounds
and
good.
Okay, so how did you guys all get connected? Was it friendship at first sight?
Yeah, definitely friendship at first sight. So a few years ago, I had just opened East Wind Snack Shop, and it's a small little place in Prospect Park, Brooklyn, Windsor Terrace. And some of these guys I knew from before, and some other guys just came to kind of check. Coincidentally, what happened, there's a few of our members, Medwin Pang from Hunger Pang and Lynn and Ed Lynn from Bricolage. We all opened in Brooklyn around in the same kind of area, probably about a mile away from each other, and we all opened at about the same time, within the same few months. So everybody kind of comes to check each other out, and I thought, what a bunch of cool people. And then I realized, I'm out here on my own. right? I'm here as a business owner, Chinese business owner, and it's tough. It's not, you know, it's not an easy thing to do to run a restaurant in New York City, and, you know, forgetting about all the political and, you know, affiliations, whatever, you know, whether you're Chinese, whether you're an immigrant, whatever you are, it's tough. But I thought having a bigger voice collectively would be able to be easy for us as business owners to get by the day. And then it started to grow a little bit more, and we started to do events and try to make things happen and try to be relevant in the Asian food scene. And so getting back to the single members, so some of those guys, I was like, wow, such really cool people. Let me ask them if they want to get together and, you know, shoot the breeze and, you know, kind of figure out some things about the trials and tribulations of going through a restaurant from a creative standpoint, where we're all chefs, and then from the business standpoint, where we all have to stand our own to make some money selling our food. And all these guys were awesome, great guys. We got together, we had a few drinks, and then we really, really kind of bonded, and it's been a couple of years now, and everybody's really, really good friends with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how does this membership and recruiting work?
So it's pretty inclusive. If you're a creator of Asian food and you are passionate about it, and you want to come out and have a good time, come on out and hang out with us. That, you know, that's pretty much all it takes.
Yeah. And Jonathan Doran, how did you hear about it? Did you get approached by Chris, or was it through just the network?
For us, I think for me, I think I was, I think Chris called me,
yep,
or we reached out, and you know, he's like, hey, you want to join a meeting? I felt like the oddball, you know, because all the chefs were in Brooklyn, and I'm like the only one that had a restaurant in the city, I think, at that time.
I was like,
I'm going to go meet
that's,
the
that's
Brooklyn
what we took
chefs
as our global reach, you know? We had an outpost in Manhattan.
And, you know, it's funny because, you know, you guys opened all your restaurants when I moved out of Brooklyn.
Oh.
In Windsor Terrace. You know, I lived in Windsor Terrace, never had any good restaurants to go to, and then they pop up literally maybe 6 months after I left.
And then you kept coming back, right? Because, you know, you had Brick Lodge to go to, yeah, East Wind to go to. So that was, you know, so it was great that, yeah. Wow, I can't believe that.
And what about you, Jonathan?
I actually don't quite remember how it all happened. Maybe it was, I don't know, a hit. I had to, you know, Luca Brazzi sleeps with the fishes or something. No, they just kind of reached out, and we all hit it off. And like Chris was saying, like, that it's a hard industry, and to just have like-minded folks to be able to talk through all of the issues, whether it's the staffing to well, in
sales techs.
Yes.
That's the issue every meeting.
Well, I think, Jonathan, I think we got together because we met at the Museum of Chinese in America, I think, that time. We were all part of that sweet, sour, bitter, spicy exhibit.
That's awesome. They actually came on the show. The curators came on the show past season, too, to talk about that. It was such a great exhibit.
Well, that was like a one of those things that were like a bucket list for me. And it was a bucket list that I didn't even have on my list, to be honored by a museum, not only by the Chinese Museum in America, which I was close to because I knew about that museum since I was like a teenager. So they were based in Chinatown, and my association was in the same building as them. So I kind of always knew about them. But then when they approached me and said, we want to include you in our exhibit, that was like awesome. And then meeting Jonathan was definitely really, really cool thing as well. And, you know, having him part of... and having him part of the group was totally cool for us.
Yeah, so, it's cool to have finally that felt like a proper representation of multiple voices,
mm-hmm.
And not just like one lump. Oh, this is Chinese food. This is one menu. Everything's together. So, Jonathan, you were talking about some of the challenges you guys discuss at the meetings. So yeah, let's talk about some of that. Like, what are some of the big issues and why, and then how are you looking to solve it?
Well, go ahead.
One of the biggest issues is staffing. So there's a shortage of cooks, of
and chefs,
and yeah.
Is this for Asian food or no,
across the board? Generally speaking, across the board. And this isn't just New York City; it's the entire restaurant industry. And I mean, where does one find help? You can go on Craigslist, or you can reach out to your friends in the Asian food mafia, and that's what's been so huge. I mean, Medwin from Hunger Pang, his good friend Tiffany, she's now working as a sous chef for Ed and Lynn at Bricolage, and those kinds of connections are just invaluable.
Yeah, we've helped each other out on all sorts of issues. You know, somebody needs a cook or a kitchen manager. Somebody else be like, I got a guy. You know, somebody's dishwasher didn't show up on Saturday, and one of the guys in our group can, you know, send him one of theirs. You know, I need a purveyor that has a certain ingredient that I can't find it, and somebody always comes up with something. And then also, you know, promotion events, and, you know, to have, you know, 7 or 8 chefs that always, you know, kind of are out there to get offers for doing things, to be able to have everybody become a part of certain events is a cool thing too. So we're, you know, we're here to help each other out in every possible way.
So what are some of these events you guys have done together?
First and foremost, you know, we got to, you know, pat myself on the back, whatever. You know, we got James Baird. That was a big thing this year.
Yeah.
So we got to cook at James Baird House, which was really, really cool. Thanks, Darren.
Why? What's that?
He hooked it up. He's got he's got the connections. That's the connection guy. So he got the connection, and we all showed up with our knives, and we put out, what was it, like a 15 course?
Yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot of food, a lot of chefs in that small kitchen with the, you know, in James Beard, which is, you know, kind of the mecca where every chef wants to cook, right? And we all got to do it as a group, and that was a big night for us.
That's awesome.
Actually, going back to your question before, you know, we also use each other's networks. You know, like, especially when I was opening up a restaurant in Miami, there is no staff in Miami, you know. And I think I reached out to Bao Bao and had her post in her, I guess there's like Thai forums where they actually look for Thai cooks. And, you know, she helped us with that, you know, little things like we have each other's networks, you know, and, you know, if it's the Chinese community or it's the Thai community or if it's whatever it is.
Yeah, that's so great.
Yeah, so that's like, you know, we got access to a whole bunch of crews out there. So yeah.
Right. And then beyond the kind of logistics and the networking aspect of it, you guys are also looking to reverse some of these like major stereotypes surrounding Asian food. What are some specific things that concern you most there?
Well, the stereotypes, the stigmas, right?
Yeah.
So we're here to defend the honor of Asian food. You know, if you want to put it that way, you know, all the stigmas across the board. You want to point to MSG. You want to point to
price. We're for MSG, right?
Yeah. I mean, now the tide is turning, right? So you're either on one side of the fence or the other. That's the big issues in the food world. Thank God. But MSG. You know, big one that always comes up in you know, a lot of our conversations is the inequality of how much you can charge for food. So, you know, if you have a beautiful, you know, Wagyu steak, you know, a steakhouse can charge, you know, $75, $95, $100. People don't want to pay more than $25 for a dish in an Asian restaurant for something like that. And
talking about? $5.
Yeah, it's grossly unfair. So, you know, that's, we know that that's not going to be a quick turnaround. We know that those things take those things take step by step to break those things down. And there's a lot of us, and we're all on the same page with it, and we want to break those things down. You know, and it's all from, you know, you're talking about stigmas, you're talking about it, you're talking about people who have a negative connotation towards what you do, and that hurts a lot. You know, we're all creative people, and we all think our food is great, and we all stand by the dishes that we make every day, and to have somebody come over and say whatever's the thing, you put MSG in it, it's dirty, it's not clean, it's got served by somebody who doesn't speak English, you know, all those things. You know, it's just about the food. Is the food good or not? And we all have our place here. So, you know, we're trying to do things along that line to make things better.
Yeah. And how do you respond to that when someone says that? Is it like, you know, on Yelp or through a review? How do you respond and kind of fight this?
At this point, it's about understanding. So you want to try to first make people understand that what you're doing is not something that is going to take the place of somebody else's stuff. It's, you know, I've learned my craft over 25 years. I'm very passionate about my food, and I'm trying to put the best food out there and take it for what it is. So, once we can get on that level, then we can get to the next level and try to kind of say, hey, you know, maybe you're wrong about some of these things that you're thinking about, and, you know, taste, come and eat, you know, open arms kind of thing first.
Right. We're also using like great product, talking about Chris's dumplings. They're made with, real premium dry aged beef, Jonathan and myself used farms, and we used to go to farmers market all the time, and we pay the premium prices. And in order to get great product, we have to pay for it. And people don't understand that, like my dumplings up in Northern Tiger, we're using, Cascoon Farms chicken. You know, these guys are raising the chickens, and they're, just for us. And we do pay a premium for them. You know, it's not like a bulk chicken that we get.
Yeah, we don't get discounts, get discounts more than the other guy.
So a part of it is definitely the exposure and just persistence in that field. What about just being in a very competitive landscape here in New York City? There's a ton of new restaurants opening every week. Do you feel like there's some difficulty in sustaining press or loyal, customers after the opening press has passed?
Yeah, I mean, yes to all those things. I think that New York is an incredible restaurant town. It's like, it's astounding to me. I think most people can easily name 20, 30 fantastic restaurants right off the top of their head, like world-class places. So the competition is extremely fierce. It's oversaturated, in my opinion. There are too many fantastic restaurants for the amount of diners. It's a difficult environment. As good as one's experience is going to be, and it's just hard to sustain.
Yeah.
In terms of getting the attention for it.
And that's why we are better banded together,
Yeah. Yeah. What other ideas have you guys brainstormed during your meetings that you have kind of tried out so far? So the James Beard event, and then what else? The cookbook, right? What's that?
Oh yeah. So we're doing a cookbook with Alan Batman. Darren, I'd let you talk about Alan.
Yeah. So Batman's pretty well respected food photographer. Has a lot of different books, and a lot of his books are donated. All the proceeds are donated to a charity. And Batman, was running a cooking school for high school students, and he was paying out of his own pocket for all the supplies and all the kitchen knives, and he was just really digging himself into a hole. Number one, he doesn't make money
onto the cookbooks because he's donating all that money. Number two, he's, he must be wealthy or something, but, and then he's doing this cooking school that it's been funded by him. So we're doing this book with him, and this will benefit the cooking school for the high school kids that are interested into going into the culinary field.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Doing, you know, charitable work also just mm-hmm. in a very competitive industry, that's really great.
Yeah, yeah. There's a shortage of people too, so.
So what, do you guys have like a title and release date and theme around the book?
No title yet. I think Alan's going to take care of that. The theme is basically all of our members, and there are some, there's some core members and then there's some people on the peripherals, but a bunch of us are highlighting about 3 recipes apiece. And Batman, love that name, Batman, but Batman we call Batman, and he comes down and he's taking these great pictures, and they are the premise of the book. It's very visual, and the recipes and bios and some, you know, kind of funny stories about us as a group and individually and about our history is all going to be part of that book. And then we're going to take it to some other places and, add some other creative stuff into it as we go. But that's the base. That's basically
awesome.
It. Yeah.
It'll
good
be...
food, great pictures, and, getting our kind of message out there as the Asian Food Mafia to, you know, come enjoy and eat some great Asian food.
Yeah. It'll be great to have that documented.
Yeah.
And then, so how big is the gang right now? How many members do you have? And
it's about 10 or 11 members right now. And, it's a really cool group. It's a really, all sorts of different types of cuisine. Traditional Chinese, visionary Chinese, gastropub Vietnamese, some more along the fusion line. So it's really, it's
the Asian diaspora.
It goes from soup to nuts, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. We're going to take a really short break and we'll be right back with more Feast Meets West.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West with the Asian Food Mafia. So how do you guys operate? I guess everyone in the group is kind of like a chef owner type. How do you get things done?
Email chains.
Yeah, big on the email chains.
A lot of follow-up.
Yeah, so, you know, we plan events and, we do some dinners and we actually get together once a month, give or take, but usually about once a month, and we pick a restaurant. Usually it's, as an Asian restaurant that we definitely have on our list to go to and eat, mm-hmm. or one of our own places. And, we hang out and we enjoy ourselves. First and foremost, we sit down, we have a couple of drinks, we eat some good food, we rant about the industry.
As
and
you
all the problems, and you want to get it all off your chest, because you can't go forward until you kind of get those things out there and a little bit of release. And you'd be surprised how it comes so much easier and in such more of a positive setting when you're at the table with people that do the same thing as you,
of course,
go through the same problems that you do, and kind of have the same kind of mind towards cooking as you do, and to be at a table with all these people and to kind of with the back and forth that there is, it's a really, really cool thing, you know. I mean,
yeah.
just to have a conversation and know that everybody knows where you're coming from,
right? And yeah. Plates of delicious Asian food in front of you too.
Yeah, that's it's always about the food, right? So we like to eat good, drink good, and work hard, play hard. That's how it is.
Do you ever think about what the chefs think when we come in at 10 o'clock at night and they close at 11?
I always think
11.
It's either some of them, I know it's a split. It's never in the middle. They either hate us or they love us. They always really want us to be there.
Who loves you guys? Or where have you had a fun meetup recently?
Hanoi House, right? We had a really, really good time at Hanoi House, and John was before, I guess, all the stuff that's happening down there and all that, but really to put that stuff aside, to have a great dinner, talented chef, and you mentioned Talde. We were at Talde a little while ago, Rice and Gold, and those dudes over there, they were cooking their heart out, and they were happy to see us. It was great, you know?
Yeah. Dale was on the show earlier a few seasons ago. He was here talking about Spam, and I brought him up because Chris is wearing a t-shirt that says Spam.
That's right. Go Dale, man. He knows. Dale knows. You know? Yeah.
So do you guys set an agenda? Do you have a vision of some goals for each meeting, or you kind of go with the flow?
There's usually an agenda. I mean, I think props needs to be given to Chris because he does a lot of organizing. And
father of the mafia.
He's a lot of follow through.
Yeah, he's the godfather for sure. Undoubtedly. He'll usually lay out an agenda. It's if there's an event coming up, then we'll need to discuss that, or recipes for the book. That's
priority right now.
Yeah.
There's always a 30-minute rant section.
Yes.
As part of the agenda. They rant.
the therapy.
Everyone needs that.
Yeah.
It's part of the release. But, I'm very understanding of the timelines and the busy schedules that everybody has. Us as a group, it's important, but everybody also has their own businesses to run. So, it's given timelines, but you have to be pretty flexible with everybody involved,
Yeah. And where would you guys like to take the group? So what's next for the Asian Food Mafia, other than the cookbook, of course?
Yeah, well, so as far as what's next, we are a well-bonded group, so there's no rush. We take things one thing at a time, and we want to be pretty precise about what we do. So we are definitely scheduling, more event dinners. We'd love to do things, we mentioned things like with the Museum of Chinese America. We also did some things with the Museum of Food and Drink. So I see your sign here. Peter is an awesome guy, and we always try to do some things with him. Right now we're also, exploring, the Asian food landscape now, going out to eat and, enjoying ourselves and doing those things. But yeah, we have that cookbook on our agenda is the very next thing up.
Right. And I was also thinking that, we can possibly take some of the guys out to Asia and go compete a little bit and just have some fun.
I mean, that was from last year. Yeah. And, I know you got the connection for all those food competitions in Hong Kong, and I'm dying to go. Yes, we're all dying to go. If we go as a group, that would be a major thing. I think everybody hands down would love
it. I wouldn't take you guys to Hong Kong. I would take you guys to Toy San.
There you go.
And be like, hey, try to cook here.
Eat some yopeng, right? Get some hantan yopeng, right?
Go get your own rice in the field.
There you go.
Oh my gosh.
Which I've done before, it's no joke.
All right, Asian Food Mafia World Tour coming up next.
There you go, world domination.
And you mentioned, Chris, trying out the Asian food scene right now. So what are your guys' perceptions about the food scene in New York this year? Like, Are you feeling good about it? Are there certain, you know, trends you know, don't approve of?
Don't approve of. That didn't cross my mind. It's more, I think the Asian food scene, the Chinese food scene, it's amazing. I mean, the New York Times is blowing up the East Village and all those wonderful spots there, from the Tang to Mala Project to Sissy's Place.
Yeah, that was actually the subject of our last show. So the boom of contemporary Chinese restaurants in the East Village and how it's now being called like Chinatown North because it's so dominated by good regionally specific Chinese cuisines.
Yeah, I think like the other chefs in this room, they're trained Asian American chefs who have worked in excellent kitchens, not necessarily Asian kitchens, and have developed a lot of knowledge, whether it's technique or kitchen management and soup to nuts, the whole repertoire, and then are opening places that speak to them and are expressing their identities and their souls, and therefore there are all these like wonderful restaurants that are very personal and very unique, and I think that New York is a mecca for that right now. I'm always blown away. I'm just like, wow, these places all sound amazing.
I love the fact that it's what you have is a whole new, like the doors have been blown wide open on the variety of type of Asian food. And it's also, you know, since it's Asian food, it's something that you, when you come to eat it, it's, you know, you're not expecting, you know, things like, you know, other trends in the food industry. You're not getting, you know, you're not getting all the edible flowers, and you're not getting all the swishes on the plate, and you're not getting, you know,
the rainbow donut,
you know, some of the minimalism and things like that. You're getting really, you know, lots of good food that originated from that point of origin in wherever country in Asia you're talking about, and has been shaped to really meet what New York wants out of food.
Yeah.
And so when you walk into these places, you know, it's like, even though everything's kind of different, it's our own Asian identity.
Right.
You know?
It's like really organic. Like this, I put in quotes, like trendiness is coming from an authentic place.
Yeah. So, you know, what could be better than that, right? So, you know, and then so it's in New York, so it's not just one place, right? It's like 35 new restaurants. So, you know, it's definitely something to go out there and really, really get excited about and really get fat on food, you know?
Yeah, now is the time to go eat out.
Yeah.
Spend money.
And then I guess what aspect of the Asian food scene would you like to see more of?
Regional cooking.
More of already like the trend of where we're going.
I think so. You know, I think there's a lot to learn about people's regions and the different types of food and the different types of ingredients that they use, you know, and we live in New York, you know, we have access to it. It's just, you know, you just need some chefs to kind of do it.
Yeah, I would say, I was speaking about earlier, but I do feel strongly about this, using less protein. Like I think that
like a health conscious approach too. Yeah,
which in a way is very traditional, right? Mm-hmm. It's like Asian food is, it's beautiful, but in some ways it's meager too, like meat as a seasoning.
Yeah, it's humble. It's not coming from like mass farm animals, that kind of negative industry.
Yeah, like it born of a true agrarian culture. And
agrarian, that's the word I was looking for.
That's really deep. I don't even know what that is.
Sometimes the English major, it pops out every once in a while. It's like, in my opinion, we're not in a good place, like in the U.S. with our industrial food pathways. And, chefs, one thing that we can do is through our restaurants and our cooking, we can put forth our own values. And so, yeah, that's what I would love to see. You look at somebody who inspires me. I freely admit, like Rene Redzepi at Noma is inspiring. He cooks with ants. I mean, asking questions like, should we be consuming something that's more sustainable? To having basically a vegetarian menu in the summer and doing radical things like that. I think that those shockwaves go across cuisines.
Yeah.
And to see folks in the Asian sphere taking those things into account, like the health of our bodies, the health of the planet, I think that would be a good thing.
Very cool. Yeah. And so we've talked about the collective and where you guys are going there. What's next for your individual careers, and what else are you guys working on?
Well, right now, I have two Eastwind snack shops, and I am looking for, I guess, worldwide dumpling domination, and I want to spread that word on how, I want everybody to come and eat, those dumplings. I'm also, in the middle of trying to, make the most maximum exposure for one dumpling in particular that I've been, I had just put on the menu, and that's a spin on the classic hagao shrimp dumpling. And so we've kind of trying to make that a thing. It was just something that I love hagaos. I ate them all my life. It was when I was a kid, that was one of my favorite things, and I eat them in the same tea coffee houses that my shop is inspired by now, and so that had to come on the menu. But I've been eating them for so long that they all kind of seem almost the same, and I thought that the dish needed maybe a little bit of a textural contrast to it. And so I tricked it out with a lattice crust and put an abalone sauce on it, and made them really big fat pillows of shrimp. And then all the rest is just adhering to the technique and the traditional recipe that it originated from. And I don't veer from that at all. While doing these, couple extra things to it. And it was something that, worked on it and cooked it and that final product was something I was really, really happy and really, really proud about. So there's my self-promotion there for here. Come eat my hagao at Eastwind Snack Shop.
It's awesome. I tried it.
Yeah, thank you.
Doran, are you also on the kind of Cantonese food push? What else are you working on?
I am. Next week I'm in Kazakhstan. Doing an opening out there.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
What's Kazakhstan worldwide, Asian food like?
Well, it doesn't really exist out there.
Okay.
There's a lot of mountain people from China in Kazakhstan, and they just kind of cook their food, and it doesn't best represent the Chinese food that's, they're bordering China. So what I'm actually going out there, create a Chinese restaurant. It's a little bit Cantonese focused because that's kind of what I've been doing recently. And I'll be out there for a month and then we'll see. And then we're also looking to expand our healthier Chinese concept, Lotus and Cleaver, in New York. So hopefully early next year, we'll have Lotus and Cleaver in New York.
Very cool. Yeah. Mr. Worldwide over here.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, it's impressive. I am currently out of the restaurant game, so I'm working as a private chef and really enjoying and trying to soak up family time.
Yeah, you deserve it, man.
Oh, thank you.
You have what, young son?
Yeah, I've got a 7-year-old son.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the, I love restaurants very much. But
will you get back into
back,
it?
Jonathan.
Yeah.
Come back. We need you.
At some point. Yeah.
Okay.
But for now.
All right, rest now.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure you're still working like terribly hard.
I see Jonathan with the very small restaurant, maybe 20 seats.
With a big smile, all happy, right?
Doing his thing.
We'll all be there,
90% vegetables.
Awesome. So if you guys tune in to our last show, you'll know that this season we've added a new segment in before we end the program, and that is quick fire questions. They're all food related, so nothing to worry about. And guys, please just share what comes to mind first.
Let's do it.
Okay. So, number one, when eating out, what neighborhood do you end up in the most? Quickfire, guys.
Chinatown.
Where I live in Clinton Hill. I try That's not fair. To That's travel.
What's your favorite restaurant in New York City right now?
Moment of silence.
Wow. So my favorite restaurant in China, in New York City right now, it has always been is Hapke Restaurant on Mott Street. That's just where I grew up eating.
Didn't you do a segment there on TV?
I actually did. There's been a few, but the most famous one was with the late, great Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah.
And we went down there and had a great meal, and I sat and talked about food and drank and ate. And we talked about the phantom menus of the American Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so you, because like growing up in Chinatown too.
Yeah, that's. I guess that's why he asked me.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I default to my all-time favorite ramen place. It's Minka.
Minka. Ooh, yeah, I love Minka. There. Oh my God.
Okay. I don't know why love they took place. Off the pork toroniku.
Did they?
Yeah. Really?
Wow. But either
if
way,
you're listening,
so much
put that on, back on the menu.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll add them on the social.
I would say Vanessa's on Eldridge.
Yeah, OG.
Yeah, love those, the sesame flatbreads.
Cheap eats.
Yes.
Okay, what's a restaurant you haven't been to yet, but it's on your hit list? Ooh. And maybe it could be like an Asian food mafia hit list, which now kind of sounds like dangerous, but...
I've been wanting to go to Jeju, the ramen or ramyun place.
Like something really high end for me. You know, I've never been to a per se.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, put it out there.
I don't have the money.
I got a.
So expensive.
And then the world will respond.
Yeah.
I've been hearing a lot, and of course it's been over the last, 50 years that they've been saying they've been famous for it. I know it's a new place they reopened, but Shorty Tang's for those... Sesame noodles, I've heard that's on my list.
Yeah, the sesame noodles really good.
Is it really? Yeah. I've been kind of like wanting to try that out a lot.
Yeah, so we actually had the guys from Hua Yuan mm-hmm. on the show as well, and they were talking about the sesame noodles. So definitely go visit them.
Yeah, right after this.
Okay, and then what is your favorite dish to cook?
Oh man. I hate to keep going back to it, but I made it a thing for myself when I started East Wind is I'm in pursuit of the perfect dumpling. So I'm always trying to figure
out what beautiful.
Makes a dumpling better. And that's everything from the sourcing of the meat to the grinding of the meat to making the dough to the amount of heat it takes to sear it to amount of water that it goes into the pan to how much you rest it afterwards. And I've been over every little detail.
Are you grinding rice?
Yeah, that's next. Grind our own flour, the whole thing. It might be a little too much, but you know, water content in dough in summer versus winter and even what mixer best mixes it and things like that. So every little detail, I'm always collecting information on that. And that's my thing. That's what I want to do.
How about you guys?
Favorite thing to cook? It changes. But right now...
don't say steak, because if you say steak...
it's river vegetable. Fish and lamb broth. There's this book, The Last Chinese Chef, and... they make reference to this imperial dish, and it just sounded so interesting to me. The fish and lamb, it's not something that you hear about every day.
That might be cool. Let's all do a collaboration on the imperial dishes.
Yeah.
Let's do something like that. That would be pretty awesome. We'll all pick an imperial dish and go to town on it.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Is this a new chapter in the book that we just developed? Just
right here in the studio.
Should do a classic one and then a modern interpretation of one.
And it even gets better.
Yeah. Right? Oh,
that's pretty awesome.
And then do a next day dish.
That's the next.
That's a David Burke thing.
All right. Well, let's do that.
Hopefully
that's
yeah.
All right. So that our next event for, you know, if you're a charity, call us up. If you're a sponsor, let us know and we'll put that together.
Okay. And then what is your favorite drink to pair with that dish?
I don't even think I answered.
Oh, that's right. Dorian, well,
I've been doing a lot of cold dishes, you know, so I've been, you know, Chinese cuisine has a lot of cold dishes, and doing it with, you know, things that are, that you can buy at the farmer's market. That's kind of like my thing right now. And I would pair it up with tea.
Ooh.
Stole my answer.
Any type of tea in particular goes well, or?
It's all different.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I like the high mountain stuff.
What's a high mountain thing?
The high mountain teas are really like floral. Yeah. It really depends where you're from too. It gets really, you know.
Talking from like Colorado, right?
Yeah. Don't, let's not talk. It's like wine.
There you go. I would pair, I like tea. I was in line when he stole my answer, but the flowery stuff too, chrysanthemum, go fa cha. You know, if you can get a couple of high grade versions of that, and that's something that's really soothing and really refreshing. And it's one of the few teas, Chinese teas, that it's okay to just put a touch of sugar in, you know?
Yeah, it's great in the summer too.
Yep.
Very cooling. Favorite drink?
Yeah, for that river fish and lamb, probably like a light red, something like, I don't know, La Pierre, Beaujolais, something like that.
Mm. Okay, and then last question. What would be your last meal on Earth?
Oh, man. Peter Luger's steak.
Speaking of steak.
Fried flounder from Hopkey. The Farmer's Pizza.
Yeah, get it all like in that. There.
Oh, yep. No, I'm sorry.
Big I can't order.
Say the Farmer's Pizza here. We're on the other side of Brooklyn.
You can say whatever.
Yes, one of those three would definitely be it.
All three.
But if I had to, you know, since it's a magical thing and anything can happen with it, one more meal at my grandmother's table. That would be, you know, old Toisan, you know, Hamdan Yukbang, the old, the old style chicken wings, and that dryer cooked rice, and and lots of sautéed vegetables. You know, I mean, you're talking, you know, the Chinese okra with gai lan, and all that stuff with the fu yi, and that would be something that would take me back. I would love to eat that.
I'd go with that theme too, like a home cooked meal. Like my mother makes a stew with pig's feet and star anise and Chinese cinnamon, ginger, and then steeps in hard cooked eggs, so that the soy, like marinated eggs and watercress and daikon, that over rice.
Oh yeah.
Oh man. This answer is going to sound so snooty compared to what you guys are saying.
High-end sushi.
Exactly. Uni.
There you go. In any form, right? In every form.
Foie gras.
There
you go. Know, if you're going to die, just
die. Pump up the cholesterol.
Yeah. There's nothing else there.
Well, yeah. I mean, foie gras goes with everything.
I would try to eat a whole lobe of foie gras.
That actually might cause the death. I don't know.
That would be the last meal.
Topped with caviar and uni.
And uni.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, thank you guys for all the answers. That was amazing. And that also wraps up our show. Thanks again for joining us, Chris, Jonathan, Doran.
Thanks for having us.
Great being here.
Thanks.
And where should listeners go to follow you and keep up to date on what you're up to?
So you could follow me at Chef Chris Cheung, CHEFCHRISCHEUNG, or at Eastwind Snack Shop, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, the whole thing.
I'm at Doran Wong. It's spelled DORONWONG. Our restaurants are at Northern Tiger, at Lotus and Cleaver.
I have an Instagram, Imaginary Chinese Food.
Love it. Okay, listeners, thank you for tuning in. Did you enjoy this episode? If so, please, please, please leave us a star rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. It would really make a difference to helping other listeners discover the show. We'll be back in a couple weeks, that's October 3rd, with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food.
Yeah. Leave that stop.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Food Radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.